The E-12 Education Policy Committee will come to order. And the first bill that we have is Senate File 3087, which is Senator Senjam's bill, proposal. And Senator Senjam, welcome. I won't necessarily apologize to you, Senator Senjam, for having to wait through all of the department's legislation and some of the minutia that we get involved in, but you get a flavor of what we do almost every day, so welcome. And we're looking forward to your Senate File 3087.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and I just on the side here, thank Senator Hand for sitting on the Education Committee, because you do get a lot of minutia, but it's important. And you know, you hold within this committee the future of our educational system in Minnesota, so it's vitally important. Mr. Chair and members, 3087, Senate File 3087 is an idea that was brought to me through a government class at Concordia College, just down the highway here, Highway 94. I went to speak to them one night, and a little bit about government and how it works. And as part of their class and their thought process, they wanted to engage a little bit and perhaps introduce some legislation that, if in fact they could find any, that they felt was worthy. And so as a part of that, and just almost coincidentally, there was a story related to an individual by the name of Kyle Herman, whose mother is here today. And they identified the Kyle Herman story and the cause related to Kyle Herman as the project that they wanted to undertake from the standpoint of legislative activity. And so that is what Senate File 37 is all about. Basically, and I have a couple of amendments, Mr. Chair, but basically before I offer them, 3087 is about if you will, maltreatment or certainly inappropriate treatment of certain individuals, students, within school systems by instructors. Now, we would all hope that this never happens, but in fact, in rare cases, it does. And 3087, as amended, will provide for a notification by the Commissioner of Education and to the parents, or to the parents, rather, of the student, information relative to what happened and so that they can be engaged. Otherwise, there are suggestions, at least, that things that, like this that could happen in school may never reach the parents from the standpoint of information. So, Mr. Chair and members, if someone might offer my two amendments, I would appreciate that, get the bill in order, and we can go into further testimony.
Senator Polk offers the Amendment A-10, and I believe we'll deal with that one first. All right, let's take the 162. Senator Koch moves the Amendment 162. And Dr. McQuay.
Mr. Chair and members, the RA-10-162 simply deletes sections 1 through 4 of the bill. The RA-10-163 within section 5 introduces paragraphs into section that subdivision and then adds a paragraph to require the commissioner to inform the parent, guardian, or legal custodian who is the subject of a reported alleged maltreatment within 10 days.
Okay, on the RA-10-162, any questions on that, committee members? If not, all those in favor of Senator Koch's motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Pose the same sign. Motion is adopted. Senator Michelle moves the R-10-163 amendment. And Dr. McQuay, would you just quickly, okay, you already explained that one, so.
Mr. Chair and members, just again, this just inserts the paragraph into section 5 and retains the remainder of the bill.
Okay. On Senator Michelle's motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Pose the same sign. Motion is adopted. Senator Senjum?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and the bill is now in the shape that conforms to where the House is on the bill, and with that, I would like to introduce Laura Herman. Laura is the mother of Kyle Herman.
Okay, welcome, Ms. Herman.
Good morning, Senator Stubb and the senators of the committee. I have a little bit of a cold, so hopefully you can hear me okay. But again, my name is Laura Herman, and this is my husband, Sean, behind me. We live in Blaine and are the parents of Kyle, for whom this...
Mr. Herman, you can pull up a chair right alongside of your... Laura?
Okay. We'd like to thank the Concordia students and their professors for taking action after hearing Kyle's story and applaud their efforts in bringing this important piece of legislation to life. I would like to take a few minutes to give you some background of Kyle's story and hope that it adds some further context as to why it is so important to support this bill. We have been living what everyone would consider a parent's worst nightmare, having a child become a victim of abuse. This nightmare is even more incomprehensible, given that this abuse occurred while our son was at school. It goes without saying that the school setting is the last place where you would think abuse would be allowed to occur even once, yet in Kyle's case, it occurred over and over without our knowledge and without any action from the school to legally report or to stop this abuse for over 7 months. As noted in the bill, Kyle started kindergarten in September of 2006. During the school year, we received numerous reports of adverse behavior in the school and met on many occasions with his special education teacher, the school principal, district special education staff, and other school staff to discuss Kyle. Sean and I both felt as though they were basically looking at us to solve the problem, since they had no idea, purportedly, what was causing him to being so disruptive in school. As parents, when we heard this, our thought was maybe there was something internal that was aggravating him, so we began bringing him to all his medical specialists, his ENT, orthotist, dentist, pediatrician, ophthalmologist. We even started to put him on a gluten-free diet. It wasn't until April of 2007 that we received a call from the school principal after an abrupt cancellation of Kyle's IEP meeting just 20 minutes before the scheduled time, stating that Kyle's special education teacher was put on leave due to her potential maltreatment of students in the classroom. They could not tell us anymore, since they needed to conduct an investigation and that their attorney would be contacting us. You can't imagine how distraught, dumbfounded, and angry we were when we following this call. We were left with so many questions. We met with the school's attorney, but again, we're not told any of the details, since this one wasn't an employment issue, and we would not be able to answer any of their questions until their investigation was concluded. In early July of 07, although their investigation was concluded at that time, and they determined that the teacher did abuse him, we were still not told any of the details of the abuse, since the teacher had requested an arbitration. The arbitration was subsequently held in September and finalized in December of that year. Although we requested a copy of the finalized arbitration and hoped that we could finally find out what happened to our son, it wasn't until early May of 2008 that we would finally find out the truth. We received a call from the local law enforcement asking if we'd like to press charges against the teacher, but still we did not know exactly what even happened to Kyle. 2 days later, we received a letter from the MDE stating that there was potential maltreatment of Kyle during his kindergarten year. Then within a week, after receiving the call from the law enforcement and the letter from the NBE, did we finally receive the much-redacted arbitration transcript in the mail. Sean and I had to manually go through this huge document to put together the timeline abuse that Kyle endured. Up until this point, again, we had no idea if this abuse happened all in one day, or more importantly, what she specifically did to our son, so Sean or I or anyone else could actually help him. On carefully going through this document, we learned that there were at least 6 to 8 occurrences of maltreatment, with the first and most heinous event happening in the beginning of this kindergarten year, and with the last two events happening in early April of 07. Specifically, we discovered that she struck, yelled at, threatened to tie him up, placed a beanbag chair on his back while he was face down upon a mat and sat on him, pressed him against a wall with the beanbag chair in the classroom, tormented him purposefully with a Santa hat in front of another parent, enticing him to cry, pulled his hair, pulled his head back, grabbed his cheeks and thighs, and picked him up by his wrists. In total, 7 months of abuse, and it took 18 months for us to find out what happened to him. Since Kyle is nonverbal, he could not tell us what was going on. As a result of this abuse, our family and many professionals have seen a regression in Kyle's abilities. Currently, at the age of 9, he is still relearning some of the basic skills he knew prior to kindergarten. We have been a strong advocate for our son, ensuring that he went to numerous therapy sessions, such as speech, physical, occupational, and music therapy, to assist his development. But much of the positive benefits that we felt he gained prior to kindergarten year are now lost. Instead, one of the things that Kyle did learn during kindergarten was what the teacher taught him was to hit. Although the bill before you is a watered-down version of the initial bill, this is the first important step needed in order to make some legislative changes so that what we went through does not happen to other children. Sean and I both grew up with the understanding that child welfare is paramount, and we safeguard our children at all times. We entrust the schools with this role when our kids are under their care. But how can the child's welfare be put first if the parent or guardian is not notified of abuse? Parental notification should be a given, in our eyes, a slam dunk. We again thank the Concordia students for recognizing that legislative changes need to be made so that other kids do not fall into the cracks like Kyle did. We also thank the co-chairs, including Republican leader Senator Senjum, Chairman Leroy Stumpf, Senator Terry Bonoff, Senator Julie Rosen, and for their support of this bill. Currently, the Kyle Herman bill has passed through two House committees with zero opposition. We again thank you, Chairman Stumpf, and the senators of the committee for your time this morning and listening to Kyle's story. We'll look forward to your support on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Herman. Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for sharing your story. You know, many of us are parents, and so we can't imagine how awful that must have been. I have a question for Senator Senjum. I'm sorry. Senator Senjum, I'm concerned about what you're deleting with your amendment. I'm concerned that you're actually deleting some important things where, for example, it gives the, you know, with the underline language, it gives the Board of Teaching the right to revoke a person's license to teach if there's been a charge filed in any school facility on two or more occasions. I don't understand why we would delete some of this, especially since, as I understand it, it's going to judiciary next, and they may not be able to take a look at our thinking if we delete it. It seems like the section of law that's being deleted is a pretty important section of law.
Chairman Stumpf and Senator Bonhoff, I would not disagree with that. It's a measure of trying to move the bill through and with as little as controversy as possible. It became apparent as the bill unfolded and people became aware of that we're going to run into some objections, perhaps significant objections, if we held those in there. I think first and foremost, the idea of a parental notification is the main objective in terms of what we're trying to get out of this bill. Beyond that, some of these other things obviously are important. The thought, at least from my perspective, was they'd be left for another day.
Senator Bonhoff?
Mr. Chair, Senator Senjum, so the language and statute would remain as it is without the inclusion of the underlined section in E, and that was because that was too controversial, are you telling me?
Chair and Senator Bonhoff,
Senator,
I'm going to have to find the... I'm going to have to find the document myself here.
Senator,
perhaps though, I have with me also, Mr. Chair, members, Katie Benke. And lest I forget, I also want to point out there's a lot of folks in the audience here with these little buttons on. A large number of those are from Concordia College, a particular government class, and I want to acknowledge them. Perhaps Ms. Benke can make some comments, and I'll try to get to Senator Bonhoff's question.
Okay. Ms. Benke?
Chairman and Senator Bonhoff, right now, Corey Kath, Representative Corey.
Excuse me, Ms. Benke. If you could give your name
for
the record, please.
Katie Benke, and that's B-E-N-K-E. Right now, Representative Corey Kath has talked to us about a follow-up legislation for next year. And so right now we're more concerned about deadlines, and we'd rather have 50% of something than 100% of nothing.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bonhoff.
Ms. Benke, you learn quickly. Smart woman. Thank
Pardon?
You.
Senator Salzman.
Just a couple questions, Mr. Chair. Really, thank you so much for bringing this bill forward. And a couple questions is, well, first of all, maybe I think they're pretty short, is why is the effective date so delayed? It's 2011. Why could that not be 2010, since we've taken so much out of the bill? And then the second question may be more to staff, and it did make me think as I read what you have deleted about this focused on teachers and licensed teachers, is that I've become aware of some troubling situations that sometimes involve administrators or principals. And the other question is that when we have charter schools that do not have licensed administrators, because we don't require that, how are they covered in all of this as well? Because we sometimes have people who are very qualified running charter schools, but they do not have an educational background and may not be sensitive to some special education issues that have been brought to my attention. So I'm very aware of this. So I guess maybe address, first of all, why we are delaying this for a year and a half if we've stricken some of this, if it could be, you know, like no sooner. And then maybe if to staff, and maybe this is a question we can answer later, but it just seems that in this issue is that are we covering everyone in a school? It's not just teachers, because sometimes it is the unlicensed person that may be involved in some of these incidents. And I think that having training for staff would be really important, but I know you have deadlines, so that just seems really important to this as well.
Senator Salzman, those are good points. I'm not sure who to direct that to.
So perhaps, Mr. Chair, I'm just wondering if the 2011 date was in there because policy had to be developed, and if we're not really changing a lot of policy, it's very directed as, you know, if there could be an implementation date that was 2010, perhaps. That was just a suggestion.
Senator Salzman and Chairman Stump, Senator Salzman, that was, I believe, the issue there as this legislation was developed, and were there to be a member that would orally amend that to 2010, I think that would be fine with me.
So I would amend, Mr. Chair, that on line 5.32, if this section could be effective August 1st of 2010.
Okay. Senator Salzman moves on page 5, line 5.32, to delete 2011 and insert 2010. And also on page 4, line 4.10, to delete 2011 and insert 2010. Any further discussion on that? Not all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. Senate Council.
Mr. Chair, members, just to kind of address part of another part of Senator Salzman's question about licensed and unlicensed people, the reporting is based on happening in a facility, in a school facility. It doesn't matter what kind of school facility. The sections that Senator Bonhoff are referring to were the licensing part and revoking the person's license. So that obviously wouldn't apply to an unlicensed
individual.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, we were just discussing the amendment that deleted these sections as I rejoined the committee, and I didn't hear any great detail. I understand you don't want to delay the bill, and I can, reading through them, I can see why some. I didn't hear an explanation as to what the real problem was with each of those in terms of delay. But the I can understand the mental health screening. What challenges that might involve. But the Board of Teaching, is this the Board of Teaching provision, is this out of line or out of with other kinds of provisions in that area that could not go forward? I would like to hear a little more as to why that section one would be a problem at this time.
Is Ms. Palmer here? Maybe you could just pull a chair up alongside of Ms. Benke.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Karen Ballmer with the Minnesota Board of Teaching. Yes, I'd be happy to speak to Section 1. These are very good questions and very important ones, and this is a very serious matter that you're discussing, so I appreciate it being brought forward. We do currently have the authority, of course, to take disciplinary action against a teacher's license, and the Board of School Administrators similarly has that authority over school administrator licenses, and that would include special ed directors and principals and superintendents. But specific to this bill, what you see already in statute in Subdivision 1 is language, and it's at the top of page 2, that gives us authority to deny a license, to automatically revoke a license, and those grounds are specifically for convictions of child abuse, sexual abuse, using minors in a sexual performance, or possessing pornographic works involving a minor. Those constitute our current grounds for automatic revocation or denial of a license, and we do have that authority already. We would be very happy to continue working with you in terms of how we can make sure that our teachers are safe for our students, and the very horrifying story that you heard earlier today does not happen again. Specific to the language that was proposed and now deleted in the amendment, there are some definitional issues, and what you have in language right now would be very, very difficult for us to actually enact and enforce and implement because of, for example, on 2.26, it talks about maltreatment. There are some boundaries that we work within in terms of what information we even receive, both from school districts and the Maltreatment of Minors Division at the Department of Education. So there are some issues there in terms of being able to apply this uniformly across the state. We may or may not receive these maltreatment findings. And so even just using the word for maltreatment in any school facility, we don't always know about that. And secondly, maltreatment needs to be a determination of maltreatment. For example, in the language that you have earlier on the top of page 2, it's when there is a conviction that a jury of peers or however this has happened, that there is evidence that this has happened. We need, if we're going to go down this road, we need language that either ties us back to statute, which would be 626 is the chapter that defines maltreatment. We need to do some work on this. We are not at all opposed to doing that work and to finding ways to continue to ensure the safety of our students. But there are some, I think, substantial definitional issues in terms of implementing what it was proposed before you today.
So, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Ballmer, then you do plan to continue to work, given that this issue has been raised, to see if we can find language that would strengthen, including this kind of behavior within the scope of this law.
Ms. Ballmer?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, we would be very happy to continue working on this and to try to completely understand the intent and to move forward with something that would be very meaningful and sustainable over time.
Okay.
Chair, can I also mention, as author, I would also, and there's a sense of obligation to the Concordia students who spent a lot of time thinking about this. And although we didn't feel it was just right today in terms of some of the conflicts and issues, I think the direction that suggested here is a good one. So we're happy to move forward in that vein.
Senator Olson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, and the other one is in section 4. Is the issue relative to the policy, is it the requirement of training? Or could one have gone as far as at least assuring that policy exists, which is a part of the manual, so that information is accessible to all staff, even if you haven't got a model for some specific type of training? Sometimes training is just telling, and I don't know that it does that much good anyway. At least having it documented in writing puts people on notice as to what kind of behavior is expected of them. And that may be a part of policies now, but maybe there's a slight change that could be made in the wording of that and allow that part to go forward. But maybe there's a reason that I'm not seeing for omitting that one.
Hey, Ms. Benke.
Chairman and Senator Olson, we reached some opposition because that might attach a fiscal note, and we were trying our best to keep budget neutral in order to meet deadline, and so that was why this year it was taken out. But we actually have a class that's planning on working on the follow-up bill.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, so the continued good educational experience for the Concordia folks. Okay.
I think they found out that they're working within some constraints like we are. And we have someone else that has joined us up there. If you could give your name.
My name is Israel Lopez. I'm also a student at Concordia.
And would you like to share some comments?
Yeah, there were some points. I have actually a testimony that I'll give real quick. That'll cover some of the questions that you may possibly have. After meeting with many of you, reading statutes, and since the Capitol has become our classroom, we have heard your concerns, and here are 5 quick points we want to address. Number 1, this is a budget-neutral bill. We believe the only costs are very minimal. As we see it, the investigation is already taking place, so there's no additional cost. The only extra cost would be the mailing of the completed investigative report. And currently, a stamp is 43 cents. Point number 2 has to do with prescriptive legislating. We heard you loud and clear. We addressed your concerns, and all those measures have been deleted from our bill for now. Another frequent question we have received is one pertaining to the Santa Claus hat on our button. Not only do we believe in the spirit of Christmas, but it's a constant reminder that the teacher waved a Santa hat in front of Kyle to make him cry, which was witnessed by another student's parent. Something as innocent as a Santa hat was turned into something so tragic. As you may know, this bill has received great media fanfare, but losing the actual facts of Kyle's tragic story to misquotes and misinformation is something that we do not wish to allow. Thus, we want to make it clear that Kyle's parents were never notified of a student interview, nor was Kyle ever interviewed in the first place. One last inquiry often brought up is one regarding to data privacy. With this bill, we don't release the gritty details of the investigation, but instead we give notice to the parents that an investigation is taking place. After the investigation is completed, we are ensuring that in a timely manner, parents are receiving the investigative report, similar to what Mr. and Mrs. Herman waited 18 months to receive. If the Hermans would have at least been notified of the initial report of abuse, it would have provided some early answers, instead of forcing them to change Kyle's diet and jump through all the unnecessary hoops they did in hopes of helping their child.
Thank you very much, Ms. Benke.
Right. I also wanted to introduce my fellow classmates, which are sitting behind the column, so I can't see them, but you can. We have Gabby DeMar, Chris Siver, Alexander Bedner, Calvin Bella, and our professor Jane Jones. And we have this group as well as over 900 others who have joined Kyle Herman's team via our Facebook group and email account. And Right now, this Minnesota statute does not require parents to be notified when their children are abused in a school facility. An abuse, as defined in Minnesota Statute 626.556, is striking a child with a closed fist, throwing, kicking, burning, biting, cutting, threatening a child with a weapon, unreasonable interference with a child's breathing, as well as unreasonable physical confinement or restraint. And so this definition is already in statute. And so our bill is pretty straightforward. It gives parents the same notification that the reporter of the child abuse receives to know if an investigation is going forward or not. After the investigation is completed, we turn the word may into a shall and tighten the notification time frame to 10 days. Right now, when a mandatory reporter makes the report, they are able to be notified within 10 days if they request it as to whether or not it will go forward to an investigation. But right now, parents aren't notified if an investigation is going forward of their child being abused in a school facility. So that allows for parents to be kept in the dark, including recurring offenses, as we heard from Mrs. Herman. But according to the process set out in statute right now, the Department of Education may notify parents, guardians, et cetera, of abuse in the school facility after an investigation is completed. But the Kyle Herman bill turns the may into a shall and provides additional safeguards to ensure parents are notified within 10 working days of the completed investigation. And we chose 10 days to be consistent with statute.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ms. Mankey. Mr. and Mrs. Herman, you have a army of great advocates in those students. And I think if Senator Dahl was their teacher or professor, he'd probably have to give out an awful lot of A's, I think, at the end of this semester.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Senjum.
Steve Larson from ARC of Minnesota is here, and perhaps a brief comment from him would be appropriate.
Okay.
Mr. Chair and committee members, I'm Steve Larson with the ARC of Minnesota. I'm the public policy director. 9 years ago, the Star Tribune had a series called Voiceless and Vulnerable, highlighting similar instances, including the death of individuals with disabilities under the care of their caretakers. This situation, type of situations such as Kyle's, have existed for a long time. The best way to avoid them is to give individuals with disabilities a voice, both a voice through assistive technology, other ways of communicating, but also give them a voice by continuing our efforts to include all students with disabilities in inclusive classrooms with other individuals that can also speak on their behalf. 30 years ago in Rochester, I supervised several group homes for individuals, adults. And unfortunately, one of the ladies under our care was raped by a night assistant. We reported under the vulnerable adults right away, got law enforcement, and within an hour and a half, I was in her father's office, insurance office, reporting to him what happened. That was 30 years ago, and yet we have Kyle's experience today. In preparing for today, I asked in our office, many of our staff are parents of individuals with disabilities, if any of them have had similar experiences. And our senior director, Karen Quantum, who's the parent of a adult child with disabilities, reported that several years ago she had a very similar experience in which a paraprofessional was abusing her daughter. This paraprofessional also happened to be the personal care assistant for her daughter. And so she continued to work with her daughter for several months. Her daughter lost 60 pounds during this course of time and eventually had to be hospitalized for a month before they discovered that the abuse was going on and who the perpetrator was. This legislation is long overdue and very necessary, and I'm very gratified to hear the support in this committee and urge you to support the Senate file.
Thank you, Mr. Larson. Senator Bonhoff?
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Senator Senjum, I do have an amendment. And this is based on the concern around making sure that the Board of Teaching does get the proper information. This amendment would be on line 1.10 after the period. It would be a new sentence, and I'll just read it. The commissioner must also notify the parent, guardian, or legal custodian that they may file a written complaint with the Board of Teaching or Board of School Administrators, whichever has jurisdiction over a teacher's licensure regarding the alleged maltreatment by a licensed teacher, or I'd say by a By school personnel, excuse me, I would delete a licensed teacher to by school personnel.
Mr. Chair and members, just a clarification that this amendment would be to the RA-10-163 amendment. And because you're in the under the statute, the licensure statute, the licensure, you would only be tying it to licensure, not all school personnel.
Mr. Chair, I would then keep it the way I had said it.
Okay. On Senator Bonhoeff's motion, any Senator Roblin?
So we're going back to revisit the amendment that was passed because that section one has been deleted.
No, this right?
Is Mr. Chair and
Dr. McQuay.
Senator Roebling, it would be to the
we'd
have to reconsider amend the amendment, yes, because it would not bring in section one of the bill. It would just be an amendment to the
163.
The amendment, if I understand correctly, would be to the RA-10-163. And Dr. McQuay, would you just restate the amendment? Oh, Senator Bonhoeff. Senator Bonhoeff.
Mr. Chair and Senator Roebling, this is still within. This is not a deleted section. But it would be the commissioner must also notify the parent, guardian, or legal custodian that they may file a written complaint with the Board of Teaching or Board of School Administrators, whichever has jurisdiction over a teacher's licensure regarding the alleged maltreatment by a licensed teacher.
Senator Bonhoeff, why would you say alleged maltreatment?
Mr. Chair, this legislation is allowing parents to have, requiring that parents be notified as soon as an investigation, as soon as there's talk of an investigation. So also letting the parents know that they can let the Board of Teaching know there's an investigation now creates a mechanism for the Board of Teaching to follow up and understand what's happening. Whereas, Mr. Chair, as I understood it before, the Board of Teaching was not always in the loop within this communication cycle.
My understanding was that the Board of Teaching was only informed if there was a conviction. And now you would end up, there would not have to be a conviction. There would just be an alleged abuse.
Mr. Chair, this amendment would alert the Board of Teaching that there was an investigation. It's my belief that that could trigger, if the Board of Teaching heard, say, somebody move from building to building, a few times that an investigation occurred, they could then be proactive. I think there is something missing in our current statutes that does not tie what happens to the information the Board of Teaching receives. This does not tell the Board of Teaching they have the right to revoke based on it. It just provides the Board of Teaching with the information.
Okay. Senator Terezre.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Bonhoeff, I understand the intent here. I think part of what we need to understand, and it will be very important, Senator Sanjam, that we continue to work on this, because sometimes age of children make a big difference. We have, and I would like to hear from the Board of Teaching and others who deal with these issues, when you put this in a situation involving an adolescent, a 14, 15, 16, 17-year-old, who is involved in a situation like this. There could be an alleged but not real report. And so these situations are very complex, and they really require investigation and participation of DHS and the county in the process of determination. And so I think that it is important that we talk about how that works and how we, I think, it's very important what you're trying to do, which is to empower parents. And I think what it's brought before us is something that we can really do. But I think we need to talk more about how agencies work collaboratively and do responsible work with parents to make sure that when we empower parents to do this, we have a system that acts responsibly on this issue. So I think that this could be done, but we need to review, you know, how many instances, for instance, do we hear about this for what type of children. And it requires further review, in my view.
Ms. Ballmer?
Mr. Chair and Senators, to this discussion, I think, and specifically to the proposed amendment, as I understand the intent of it, it is really about the parental engagement and involvement. And to that extent, we are very happy to have parents aware of us, the Board of Teaching, who stand in a position to act when there are when there is evidence of misconduct. And so I think, as I understand the amendment, in terms of notifying the parents, the guardians, the legal custodians about us, I think that is that's fine, and that's a good thing and would be very positive. In terms of how this might, I don't know that that would change our processes. We are in many cases subject to the timelines of other agencies and other governmental units. The investigations that happen at the local level, at the county level, at the criminal level, with law enforcement and so forth. So this would not probably change anything in terms of our process or how we could, what we could do within it, but I think it would add a layer of communication so that at a minimum parents were aware of us, because that probably is not always the case, unfortunately. So I think that we would stand in support of the oral amendment to the amendment, and would, as you point out, Senator Ray, like to continue working through the complexities of these issues.
Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do also, Senator Bonhoff, I probably will oppose your amendment. I share the same concerns that Senator Torres Ray has. I will trust that Senator Senjum and the good folks at Concordia College might consider all the ramifications of words like alleged, and I feel that they could come back with a better, stronger language for parts, sections 1 and 2. So I'm respectfully going to oppose your amendment.
All right. On Senator Bonhoff's amendment, Senator Anderson.
Sorry, I'm just trying to understand this so I am clear. Senator Bonhoff, you're saying you want the Board of Teaching to be notified sooner? Did I misunderstand?
Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, the parents, when they're notified of this investigation, are also notified that they may file a complaint with the Board of Teaching.
On Senator Bonhoff's motion.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Michelle.
I just wanted to be clear. There's a number of us who have been in and out, and I apologize for that. I guess I wanted to ask the author and those pushing this bill if they support or not the Bonhoff Amendment.
Senator Senjum.
Mr. Chair and Senator Michelle, I to a great extent defer to the Board of Teaching and the representative here, and it does seem fine with them. I also, though, this is a delicate balancing act. Allegations against a teacher, false allegations against teachers, could ruin a teacher's career, and that's the last thing we want. So it's difficult water, but I think we're just going to probably have have some experience with it. If this would get abused, I would be the first one would be here next year with some kind of an amendment to fix it.
All right, Senator Anderson.
I apologize, too, because that's a problem with not having it in writing. I want to make sure I really understand this. So right now, would they get that information at some point? Parents,
Senator Anderson, they may file a complaint the way I understand it right now if they wanted to. What this would do would be to alert the parents that they may file a complaint. So right now there is no information to tell the parents that they may file a complaint.
And, Mr. Chair, this would do so during the investigation before it's completed. So when there's been an accusation and there's an investigation, this would tell parents you can file a complaint before. I would have
Senator
concerns
Bonhoff.
If that's what you're proposing.
Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, This legislation, without this amendment, alerts a parent as soon as an investigation begins that there's an investigation going on related to their child. This would add to the notice that they're given. In that notice, it would also say you may file a complaint to the Board of Teaching regarding this matter, basically. So it would just be looping the Board of Teaching in that something's ongoing.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Senator Anderson,
there's two questions. Why not wait until the investigation is complete before you encourage a parent to pursue those options? Because I'm not sure that it would be appropriate to have a complaint. I mean, they can always file a complaint anytime they want, and that's, you know, anybody has that right to do that. But this would probably encourage them to do so before there's been a decision made whether the complaint was justified. I guess that would be the concern I have based on similar objections. But also, if you want to loop the Board of Teaching in, you're not trying to inform the Board of Teaching. You're trying to inform the parents that they can complain to the Board of Teaching, correct?
Okay. Senator Olson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think I appreciate what Senator Bonhoff is trying to do, but I do think that in light of Ms. Baumer's earlier testimony, until we get it resolved what they could in fact take as an action, it would be better to have that kind of language incorporated when we get that new language next year as to what it is, that then the parents are also informed that they can file a complaint, because then something could in fact happen. Right now, it couldn't. I don't think the Board of Teaching's authority is refined enough to encompass this, so that it would just essentially make work for them to have this reported and have to respond to it and let them know that at this point they couldn't do anything with it. So I think it would fit better with when we deal with this whole licensure Board of Teaching issue, hopefully next session.
Okay, is everybody ready to vote?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Senjum.
I was alerted, and I'm not sure what her testimony might be, but Amy Roberts
taking
is
quite a risk.
Here. And I'm told has some thoughts, and hopefully brief.
Mr. Please. Chair and members, Amy Roberts with the Department of Education. I appreciate that introduction. To provide some context, the Department of Education is the entity that investigates the allegations of maltreatment in public schools. Current law requires us to notify the reporter whether or not we are going to open a case or take a report and actually fully investigate that case. In about 20% of those instances, the reporter is the parent. So in those instances, the parent knows that we are going to open a case for an investigation. In the other 80% of cases, the parent would not receive notice that we are opening an investigation. This legislation will change that piece. However, once a case is opened for investigation, a parent receives notice. We do not investigate or interview a child without giving notice to that parent that we are opening this case, that there is an investigation ongoing related to maltreatment, and their child is somehow involved in that particular case. With respect to, I just have a few numbers. We receive about 400 to 450 contacts each year. We open about 100 of those contacts for actual investigation. There's a lot of traffic that will come to the department. Some of it is just general questions. They're not sure where it should go, what it's about, if they're in the right place, if they've got the right entity. But only about 100 actually go to the full-fledged investigation stage. So that's just to provide, and those numbers have been fairly consistent over the last couple of years, some context for how it works from our perspective.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to withdraw my amendment. It sounds like there's enough question around this that it ought not to be attached to this bill.
Okay. Senator Senjum, actually, we need a motion. Senator Anderson?
Mr. Chair, I'm happy to move the bill. I just had one more question, if I may.
Sure.
Just to understand this whole issue, what happens if a child is injured?
What?
Do they find out
I mean, do their parents find out right away, immediately? Because it sounds like there, you know, there is a time lag here. But if a child is injured, I mean, I've gotten calls, your son was hurt on the playground, but there's no allegation of maltreatment. I mean, is there a mechanism for a parent to find out right away, or do they have to wait till there's a report and an investigation to even find that out?
Generally, it's the local district that has the responsibility, whether it's the superintendent, the principal, or the teacher. I would imagine individual school districts have policies on that, and they're the ones that should be the first line of notification to the parent, I would think. I see heads nodding back there. So, yeah,
Mr. Chair, we may not have time to get into that, and I can investigate that further. But it's just raised that concern for me that I would hope that parents would find out right away.
Okay.
If a child has been injured.
And Senator Olson wants to move the bill.
That's fine.
So Senator Olson moves that Senate file.
Chair?
Yeah.
Hank from Pacer here. Is there any way I could just briefly testify?
Oh, okay. I didn't have you down.
Oh, okay. I've got it on my agenda. Sorry.
Okay.
Thank you, and I'll make this very, very brief. My name is Kim Kang, and I'm the Pacer at the Public Policy Director at Pacer Center, and also the chair for the Coalition for Children with Disabilities. And the coalition is actually comprised of 8 statewide organizations. I'm here on behalf of the coalition to support Senate File 3087. Studies have found that children with disabilities are abused at about twice the level of other students who do not have disabilities. In addition, these studies have also found that children with disabilities tend to be maltreated multiple times in multiple ways. Unfortunately, much of the abuse for children with disabilities in schools has been under the seclusion and restraints label. Fortunately, we will have a Minnesota law that will go into effect August 1st, 2011, which will provide some guidelines around using seclusion and restraint in emergency situations only. In addition, a federal law sponsored by Congressman George Miller will provide regulations around the use of seclusion and restraints for all children in public and private schools. However, when you look at child abuse over the course of 2 years, child abuse is the only word that comes to my mind. More disturbing is the fact that as many as 8 people are suspected of witnessing various aspects of his abuse and didn't report it. After all, wouldn't it be clear to any adult that they should report seeing a child being slapped or report seeing an adult put a beanbag on a child's back and seeing them sit on top of the beanbag, possibly crushing and suffocating a small child? Wouldn't any adult who cared about children be motivated to report such abuse immediately? These are the questions that really keep me awake at night when I look at Kyle's situation. It makes me wonder if society overall still silently believes children with disabilities are less than other children who do not have disabilities, which continues to feed our tolerance for this type of abuse in our schools. Abuse that is denied, tolerated, covered up, hidden, and not talked about. I want to thank Kyle's family for having the courage to step forward and reveal the hidden, reveal a parent's worst nightmare come true. But Kyle's nightmare, as hard as it is for him and his family, is our wake-up call to do something. And we owe it to Kyle and other children to take this very seriously. While requiring a school board to adopt a written policy and parental notification are worthy beginnings for the law, I just want to offer a few additional recommendations for the future to consider. Parents should be notified immediately of alleged abuse. Kids who can't communicate and get hurt in school can't tell their parents what happened to them, and their injuries may not be immediately obvious. If parents aren't notified promptly, they may not realize their child needs medical attention. In addition to addressing all aspects of maltreatment reporting, which I understand this bill does, it should also include some statutory definitions of child abuse. After all, if you don't know what the definitions are, how can you report the abuse? And every school staff member should be required to submit a signed statement attesting that they have read and understand the written policy. There should be a continued commitment to encouraging positive behavior interventions for children with disabilities in schools and providing additional funding for the Minnesota Department of Education to expand their efforts. we should also provide specialized training. I understand this is probably not something we can do now because of the budgetary situation, but I do believe Senator Saltzman's recommendation to provide specialized training on child maltreatment and children with disabilities for school staff is essential. A 2000 study found that 92% of special educators would attend specialized training regarding child maltreatment for children with disabilities if it were made available. And lastly, we should look at strengthening criminal penalties and fines for mandated reporters that do not report. I mean, I think this is essential, and I think I find it very disturbing that we had around 8 people who actually witnessed this over the course of 2 years and waited this long to actually have something done about it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ms. King. All right, Senator Olson, or Senator Senjum, this bill has to go to the Judiciary Committee?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Wednesday afternoon.
Okay. Senator Olson moves.
Thursday afternoon.
Thursday,
sorry.
I'm sorry. Thursday. St. Patrick's Day, I'm sorry.
Senator Olson moves that Senate File 3087 as amended be recommended to be passed and sent to the Committee on Judiciary. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
All
appreciate it.
Students over at Hamlin.
Concordia.
And committee.
Concordia.
Oh, Concordia, I'm sorry. Committee members, before we adjourn, we did not take up 2 bills that we had on the agenda. Those will be rolled over to tomorrow. And we do have a fairly long number of bills that we'd like to address before the end of the week. So we'll try to work our way through.
We'll be better tomorrow.
Committee is adjourned.